The Carle Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carle Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's February the 15th, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services. He's in Bloomington, Illinois. And later in the program, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bill Mayer. He's at the Grain Elevator located in Lexington. In agricultural news, the United States Secretary of Commerce says the U.S. is willing to make further cuts in its farm programs, but only if other nations step up to the platter as well. And USDA defends its $200,000 income cap in Washington. We'll have details of these and other stories shortly. Also this half hour, we'll hear a commentary from the Farm Bureau. And don't forget that just after the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Peter Levitt will join us to take a complete look at today's agricultural weather forecast. It all happens on this Thursday edition of AM 580's Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for a representative nearest you.
In Chicago on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby March wheat at $4.53 and a quarter, up 2 and a quarter today. May futures at $4.67 and three quarters were up 2.5 cents. March corn at $4.07 and a half, off 3 quarters. The May at $4.20 at the end of the day, down 3 quarters. And July futures at $4.28 and a half, they finished a quarter lower. September corn at $4.15, up 2.5 cents. December futures gained 3.25 cents at $4.04 and a half for the day. March soybean futures up 8 and a quarter at $7.58 and three quarters. The May at $7.74 and three quarters, up 8 and a quarter. And July beans at $7.88 and a half, up 9 and a quarter. November contract, your new crop, up 7 and three quarters at $8.10 and a half. March soybean meal at $2.25.10. That's up $2.50 for the day. The soybean oil, March contract there at $29.76. It's up 8 cents. Mercantile exchange numbers, March feeder cattle at $100.45. They're down 35 a hundredweight. February live cattle at $94.12 and a half, down a dime. The April's were up 12 and a half at $96.40. And the April lean hogs at $68.70 were down 17 and a half cents. From the outside market, crude oil off a nickel at $57.95 at this hour in the nearby March contract. The CRB index at $303.64, up $1.72. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands at 12,761. It's up just about 19 points at this hour.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened to the Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange is Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services out of Bloomington, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Let's talk about the marketplace. Kind of a fun one to watch if you're a technician, I would think.
Well, the soybeans, continue to show amazing strength compared to maybe what's happening over in the corn market, where the corn market, at least in the front months, have kind of leveled out and trying to struggle in here between 405 and 415. But beans in a fairly, just a steady climb on up. Now, you do have some of these technical indicators that do suggest the market is maybe vulnerable for a setback in here, but until one occurs, the trend is your friend in here.
We've had a pretty good climb, I think, from the gap up on the continuous charts. January the 12th, a low of 686 to today when we finished up at 758 and three quarters. It's been a pretty good climb.
It has, and a lot of the strength, especially here, I think, over the past few weeks, has been pretty well contributed to soybeans' need to kind of become more competitive to corn. So whereas soybeans didn't do much during the fall months, corn outpaced soybeans significantly during the fall months, and then as the corn market tried to buy acres, based upon private surveys, the market has accomplished its goal of buying those additional acres at the expense of soybeans. So now soybeans are kind of gaining on corn, I think getting a lot of their strength from the plain old corn-soybean price ratio to become more competitive for those acres that's going to become available for planting here in the next 30 to 60 days. So I think that's where soybeans are getting a lot of their strength. It's just to be a little more competitive to corn, to make sure that that planting decline in acreage isn't more than maybe what the trade's talked about here over the past couple of weeks.
What do you see out of South America? Any reason to feel like their crop's getting smaller at this point?
Well, there's talk that is probably getting smaller. This is the time of year, anytime here during the first half of February or so, that everybody begins to size up that South American crop. And this is when the crop either begins to get bigger than what the trade had worked into the market during the month of January, as yield reports and the final weather pattern of the season kind of touches off yield prospects, and or begins to tuck in. And in this case, the weather problems, rust problems that the South America has experienced maybe here over the past couple of weeks at least has people thinking that the crop isn't getting any bigger. It has stopped growing in size, and you have a few private people now that are beginning to want to backpedal a little bit on that crop size. And anytime the market you see that, the market has to readjust its supply-demand thinking longer term and reflect higher prices, and that's kind of what's happening here in the bean market. But I think the main focus in beans is worries over losing substantial acreages to corn, I think.
And are you concerned at all that'll happen, or has the switch been on and you're satisfied? You've been satisfied, I know, for quite a while that most of the acres had been switched already. Do you think they'd switch back?
Oh, I think that's possible, but I think Mother Nature probably, you know, has a lot to say about this from here on forward. I think the farmers, for the most part, have pretty well got themselves, penciled in. I think there's always, an 80 here and 80 there that might be switched. But for the most part, I think they've got their intentions in place. And it would take a significant move, I think, in the price ratio to get them to switch back to soybeans. And/or I think Mother Nature would probably be a quicker way of getting them to switch if planting season gets off to a slow start and, struggles.
Any reason to make new crop sales for soybeans?
Well, not other than, we don't know what tomorrow brings and we don't know what next week brings. And, when you've got $8 futures on soybeans, you've got some fairly attractive cash forward sale opportunities that this is a place to do at least a starting point anyway. Because, like I said, we don't know what tomorrow could bring. And the risk of not selling anything at $8, I think, would be a wet, delayed spring, and all of a sudden the market would have to readjust to maybe acreage increases rather than acreage declines, and that would be a significant hit to the marketplace.
Are you convinced that beans can continue their rally?
I got some cyclical work that kind of indicates that we're in a window here, that the market is vulnerable to a kind of a midwinter type high and a setback kind of into the March time frame.
How about on the corn side?
Corn side, probably more. I have that also, but I think the corn market is going to be more of a consolidation to weakness. But there's room in here to kind of have a scary setback in here at any time.
And what do you term a scary setback? How much of a downside risk?
Well, in today's tight market, you could lose 10 cents pretty quick and be a little bit on the scary side and all of a sudden begin to tear up some trend lines in the chart picture, and then then the market begins to second-guess itself. I'm a little concerned with corn in the sense as the corn market feels as though the whole world is long corn waiting for it to go up. And the bets have been placed, and unless something comes along to let those bets be realized, there might be a lot of people have to run for the exit door one of these days. So, but corn definitely, I mean, new crop corn has been able to make new highs for the year. The old crop corn has not been able to do that. It definitely needs to do that on a technical basis here fairly soon, where I think the market is vulnerable for a decline into a late February low.
And have you taken a look at the livestock, and what do you see there for the next
week? I haven't had a chance to study the livestock this week, fighting snow and watching corn and soybeans. But I think, generally speaking, there's not a whole lot of new information on the livestock front. I mean, I think it's still worried about a sharp rally in corn prices and feed prices that would still, kind of come back and hammer them pretty well.
We appreciate you being with us today.
Very well.
That's Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services out of Bloomington, Illinois, joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens each and every Thursday afternoon.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Chip Jorstad in Champaign at 217-378-7633. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Just after the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Peter Levitt will join us for a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. Our own Ed Kieser says across the two-state region tonight, in the north and central parts and northeastern parts of Indiana, mostly cloudy, some scattered snow showers. Elsewhere, clear to partly cloudy. Lows will range from 8 below zero in some of northern and central locations to 10 above in the south. Tomorrow, he says, in northwestern and west central Illinois, increasing cloudiness, some light snow arriving during the late afternoon. Elsewhere, mostly sunny. Highs tomorrow, says Ed, from 18 in northwestern Illinois to 32 in the far south. Tomorrow, the wind speeds 10 to 20 miles an hour in the morning and then increasing to 15 to 25 miles an hour and higher gusts during the afternoon. The extended forecast, an Alberta Clipper, will spread some snow across Illinois and Indiana Friday night with scattered snow.
In agricultural news, U.S. Secretary of Commerce Carlos Gutierrez says that the U.S. is willing to cut its farm subsidies further than its earlier offer, but that trading partners must give in return. He also says that India holds the key for the successful conclusion of the Doha round of world trade talks. Analysts suggest the intent is to build pressure on India, especially to cut tariffs on agricultural products and industrial goods. The House Agriculture Committee had tough questions for USDA Secretary Mike Johanns on USDA's plan that would end direct payments to producers with adjusted gross incomes over $200,000 a year. Johanns testified yesterday relatively few producers would lose direct payments under the proposal.
Actually, when you slice through this, it is actually 38,000 farm operators who have an AGI over 200,000, but only about 25,000 of those receive farm payments. So you can slice that even a little finer when you figure out who is getting the payments.
And lawmakers suggested the AGI cap would have a disproportional effect on southeastern farmers. That put USDA's chief economist Keith Collins in the hot seat.
I don't have regional distribution, because it's not available from the IRS, on filers with AGI over $200,000 to get payments. I only have it for those Schedule F filers with over $200,000. And as I said, they account for 4.2% of all Schedule F filers. If you look at Alabama, 4.1%, same as the national average. If you look at Georgia, it's higher than Georgia, 6.8%. If you look at Mississippi, 4.4%. Right next to that, Louisiana, 4.4%. So it's in many of the southern states, it's very parallel to the national average. When you get to the northeastern states, for example, then you get up into some of the double digit, 10 to 15%.
USDA Chief Economist Keith Collins. Meanwhile, USDA says U.S. farmers and ranchers could sell a record high $258.7 billion worth of crops and livestock this year, while cash expenses would reach a record high $222.6 billion. Yesterday, USDA economists issued their first forecast for 2007 and beyond agricultural income. USDA analyst David Stallings says net cash income will remain flat for the next decade.
We do expect net cash income to be above its most recent five-year average, and we expect it to peak at around $70 billion from 2009 through 2012.
Direct government payments are forecast to drop nearly $3.9 billion in 2007 as a result of expected higher crop prices through the end of the year. Yesterday, USDA's baseline report also shows corn-based ethanol will consume 3.2 billion bushels this growing season and reach 4 billion bushels by 2010. The Commerce Department says the U.S. trade deficit has climbed to a record high for the fifth straight year. 2006 imports exceeded exports by nearly $764 billion. The 6.5% increase in overall trade deficit is largely due to higher oil prices and rising demand for foreign-made goods. And the U.S. ambassador to Japan says agriculture is the key to a possible free trade deal with Japan. Thomas Schieffer says Japan increasingly will need to rely on the U.S. as a food provider with the aging of Japanese farmers. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILO radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. That program, by the way, airs at 11:30 a.m. Central Time right here on this radio station on Saturday mornings. You can always pick it up early if you'd like on Friday night. It's posted to our website at willag.org by about 6 o'clock Friday evening. Commodity Week on the website at willag.org. by 6 p.m. Friday nights. Our guest this week on the program, Joe Victor of Allendale. Well, up next in today's Listener Opinion Forum, Shelby County Farm Bureau's Amy Rochkes says Farm Bureau is a strong and united front.
The American Farm Bureau Federation recently completed its 88th annual meeting, overwhelmingly coming together to support major policy issues that will guide us through the next year. Showing unity throughout much of the policy deliberation, both the decision-making process and resulting policy, truly reflects the harmony within our organization. Farm Bureau delegates voted to continue the organization's support of the concepts of the 2002 Farm Bill as Congress heads into crafting a new Farm Bill. The current program remains very popular with farmers across the country. While they recognize that some adjustments will be needed, farmers are dealing with rising input costs and the perpetual uncertainty of commodity prices. They continue to need a safety net to ensure they can carry on producing the nation's food, fiber, and fuel. The delegates also overwhelmingly reaffirmed their support for comprehensive immigration reform that improves farmers' timely access to legal farm workers, underscoring the need for an improved agricultural guest worker program. It is always interesting for me during Farm Bureau's annual meeting to watch the policy debate play out. For example, on animal identification, the delegates voted 85% to 15% in favor of a voluntary program. They also reaffirmed their support for a voluntary country of origin labeling program, defeating by 2-to-1 margins two separate amendments calling for mandatory COOL. The American Farm Bureau's annual meeting involved deliberations by 366 voting delegates representing every state and commodity. This policy, developed from the bottom up and approved at the annual meeting, will guide our legislative and regulatory efforts throughout 2007. Once again, farmers from all across the country, with much in common but also with different concerns and needs, have come together to decide what is best for U.S. agriculture as a whole. We are a strong front ready to face our challenges with unity and certainty. This is Amy Rochkes with the Shelby County Farm Bureau.
Amy Rochkes' comments are her own. They reflect her opinions. They do not necessarily reflect those of this station. We strongly urge listeners like you to become involved by sharing your views as well. To do so, just call us at 217-333-2107. 800-480-0850.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for a representative nearest you.
Time now for our look at the daily cash grain market with Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois on a Thursday afternoon. Good afternoon to you, Bill.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Farmers all dug out and moving any kind of grain at this point?
No, it's still pretty slow out here. I think they're probably still digging. I know the elevators, like up here at Prairie Central, they had some digging to do today to get everything opened up and ready to go after the last 2 days, but not much movement at all.
How has the basis been holding up through the snowstorm?
Corn basis is, corn and beans both have been pretty steady for the last week here, but we did see the corn basis improve a little bit earlier in the week, and then looks like maybe there was some grain sold, some hedge grain sold, and it's backed off a little bit more, but all in all, the corn basis is anywhere from a couple to 4 cents better. The bean bases really hadn't done anything, and we're kind of running out of time on this bean bases. We may have this period here before the South American crop really comes in that, you know, we kind of a lot of times anticipate that crop sooner than it gets to the ports. But once the South American crop starts filling the export needs, it's going to be hard to get the bean basis to improve, I think.
Then that would be the latter half of March, early April, is that right, or is it sooner than that?
No, that's about the right time frame. It's earlier than it used to be because the farmers down there plant earlier and earlier each year to avoid the rust, but the majority of the beans still come in between that March 15th and April 15th period.
And that'll be a time that they start to fill the export needs, and that could be a tough time on commodity markets in Chicago then for soybeans?
Well, I think at least on the basis side of it, we still on the future side have to compete somewhat with the corn here to hopefully get some acres planted here this spring.
And farmers taking a look at this price of the soybeans and saying, well, I was thinking about switching, but maybe not now.
Yeah, I still see a lot more excitement over 375 corn than I do, 780 or 85 beans for next fall. But it's keeping people are watching a little bit closer now. I think this bean price has somewhat done its job to get up there and compete.
Yeah, you just don't often see 375 corn.
No,
it's a lot easier.
It is pretty
exciting,
I have to say.
Yeah, it's a lot easier to get excited about that than it is beans that are approaching that 750 level. I suppose I would think if you had an operation to put those into the ground. What are your expectations as we go through the next month or so, heading into the March 30 acreage report? Will we see a sideways market, or will there be a consolidation followed by a drop?
I think it'll be continue to be choppy. I think we can get another little, maybe get some excitement going again here on March 1st when they actually come out with the outlook numbers. Just any time that they remind us what we're looking at here on the supply and demand, I think that gets some buyers off their, back into the market, just off the sidelines. So, but I really think the choppiness until you get in there and see whether you're going to get it planted or not, that's really going to be the next question.
And your bids for the day?
385 on the corn, 376 new crop, 722 on beans, 775 new crop.
We appreciate it.
Thanks.
And Bill Mayer is with Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on Thursday afternoons. In 2 minutes, we'll take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. Your regional newscast comes up right now.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Two students who portray Chief Illiniwek are suing the University of Illinois and the NCAA to keep the symbol. Their suit filed today in Champaign County seeks to keep the NCAA from enforcing sanctions against the U of I for maintaining Chief Illiniwek, which opponents call racist and hostile. The suit would also prohibit the U of I from complying with those sanctions. Dan Maloney and Logan Ponce claim their academic and free speech rights would be violated if Chief Illiniwek is eliminated. Urbana's school district has hired an Effingham law firm to look at allegations surrounding a Thomas Paine Elementary teacher facing sexual assault charges. The Taylor law firm will conduct an external review of the District 116 investigation of John White that was done last fall, along with new allegations involving the second-grade teacher. Dennis Weedman, an attorney representing the board, says getting an independent review of the White case would have credibility in the community. There's no timetable for any completion. White faces three counts of predatory criminal sexual assault for alleged incidents that happened at the elementary school. A report from a group of U of I professors has harsh words for the state of Illinois' current budget situation. The first annual Illinois report says the state has a structural budget deficit, despite it being balanced in the short term. The report from the Institute of Government and Public Affairs points to shortfalls in state pension funds, as well as new health care and preschool access programs that it says will be difficult to maintain without significant changes in the budget. A man who said he handled some applications for Illinois state jobs more speedily than others testified today that there are no laws or state rules against the shortcuts he took. Mark Longmire testified for the state in the case of Don DeFrades and Michael Casey. The former Department of Central Management Services employees were fired by the Blagojevich administration last spring for allegedly rigging the hiring process for favored applicants. They're seeking reinstatement in a hearing before the Civil Service Commission. And Peoria-based Caterpillar plans to repurchase $7.5 billion of its stock over the next 5 years. The company CEO, Jim Owen, says the new authorization emphasizes the confidence that Cat has in its long-term growth prospects. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture. This is the Closing Market Report on WILL. Pete Levitt joins us on Thursday afternoons to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. Hi, Pete. Thanks for being with us today.
Right. Hi, Todd. Glad to be here.
It's been cool, cold even here in the Midwest. Colder than average by a pretty good shot, really, isn't it?
Yeah, close to 15 degrees below normal in a lot of cities in around the area of Illinois, western Indiana, southeastern Iowa, all these stations averaging close to 15 degrees below normal for the month so far. And were the month to have ended today, it would have been the coldest February on record. However, the month isn't going to end today, and after a few more cold days, we actually have some good news, because it looks like starting about next Tuesday or so, we're going to see temperatures starting to average above normal. And looking at the very extended forecast, a near to mostly above normal temperature pattern may well persist through the end of the month.
And speaking of extended forecasts, some longer-term forecasts came out today from the National Weather Service.
Yes, today is the third Thursday, which means we get the 30- and 90-day forecasts. And to sum them up, as far as temperatures are concerned, just for the month of March, they have them above normal in the western third of the country, and they opt out of forecasting the rest of the country, calling it equal chances. So we don't know whether they're going to be warm or cold for March. For precipitation for the 30-day forecast, dry in southern Nevada, wet in the Texas panhandle and vicinity, and equal chances. That's that no forecast type of thing for the rest of the country. So we're in the dark as far as March is concerned for the Midwest. For the 90-day forecast, gee, it's more of the same. Equal chances for most of the country. This is the period, by the way, March, April, and May. So look for, it doesn't mean, by the way, it's going to be normal. It means that the odds of it being normal, above or below normal, each of those three categories is the same. So take your pick. And as far as temperatures are concerned, they do push warmer air from the west across the northern plains into the upper Midwest and Iowa. So above normal temperatures for the March to May period is what they're forecasting.
And very quickly, we've heard a little bit about some problems in Brazil, or at least some people thinking that crop's not as big as maybe USDA has forecast. I don't know about problems, but what's your sense of the crop size there?
Well, I think their problem is probably a devolved from two things. It's been excessively wet in the new lands areas of Brazil, the west central Brazil area, and they haven't had the sunshine they normally need to develop well. And also the wet weather does promote Asian rust, although I haven't heard any significant outbreaks of that being reported. All in all, it was a too wet season there. And oddly enough, in extreme southern Brazil, where they also grow beans, it's been a little bit on the dry side. So it has not been an ideal spring-summer pattern for them in Brazil so far.
We appreciate you being with us.
My pleasure.
Pete Levitt joins us here on the Closing Market Report each and every Thursday afternoon to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. Don't forget to tune in tomorrow morning again at 8:49 for our first look at the agricultural markets on the pre-opening Commodity Market Report with your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the radio stations, Dave Dickey. I'm Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report in Commodity Week, bidding you a good afternoon.